So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! It's all about the game, and how you play it, all about control, and if you can take it, all about your stand, and if you can play it, it's all about pain,
and who's gonna make it?
I am the game, you don't wanna play me,
I am control,
no way you can shake me,
I am heavy debt,
no way you can pay me,
I am the pain,
and I know you can't take me,
look over your shoulder, ready to run, like a craven thing from a smoking gun,
I am
and I made the rules, so move on out,
you can die like a fool.
Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be.
Come on over, son, or why don't you ask me?
Don't you forget there's a price you can pay,
cause I am the game and I want to play.
Nothing but play the game, Louisville style. Welcome to the MVM Radio Network and the Ed Springs Show, home of LouisvillePolitics.com, where you can go for all the latest. Just about everything we do is put up at LouisvillePolitics.com. That is our main website. While you're there, don't forget to join our RSS feed. And if you can, folks, do me a favor. For those of you who subscribe, we have thousands of subscribers today. And I tell you, we just went an update. I got to put this out there. We just updated and our numbers and everything today for the first time in a while. And I have got to say thank you. In so many ways, it's incredible. There are thousands and thousands of people who listen to our shows, who check out the website. You know, we're not talking about 1 or 2,000. We're talking about tens of thousands of people. And, you know, without you guys, this is why we do it all. But one way that helps us pay for this show and try to keep things going, it covers the expenses, is when you guys click on the ads. Now, I'm as bad as everybody else. I don't like to click web ads either, but I will click on an ad. You don't have to stay on there long, but click on it because advertisers pay for those clicks, and that money, as little as it is, helps pay for expenses. And that's why I click on other people's ads as well when I'm on their websites. But, man, I tell you what, these numbers are incredible, and it's just all thanks to you guys. You know, when we see the thousands of subscribers that continue joining, I mean, we are more than doubling, it seems like, each and every month. I am incredulous at what's going on. But I wanted to say thank you to you guys, and please ask you to help continue supporting the show by clicking on the ads. But, man, you know, it's amazing. Ed Martin, how the heck are you, man?
Well, I'm doing all right. You know, I wonder how many of those are opposition research people wanting to – waiting for me to trip up and pull a Paula Deen or something.
Well, it's all about you, Ed Martin, you narcissist.
Well,
No, I guarantee you some of those, I believe it or not, some of those really are.
I've got a sociopathic streak in me. I mean, who doesn't, right? You know?
Well, like I've got to be honest
with
you.
You've got to be a little bit of a narcissist or a sociopath to say, yeah, I'm going to get on the radio and people are going to listen to me.
Well, that may be true, man. I'm probably the biggest narcissist there is then.
If self-esteem was the other direction, it'd be like we'd be sitting around going, oh, why bother? Nobody listens.
Well, I got to be honest with you. You know, when you mentioned the opposition research angle, you know, it's actually not far off. We know that a lot of people use our website for research, whether that's opposition research or other. I know the Courier Journal and WHAS 11 love to steal stories from us without giving credit. So you can say they're researching for their news stories by using our content without credit, you know. And there's other people, Bill Boyce, things like that. There's all kinds of people who check it out. So some of it may be opposition research. Now, whether that's you know, against you or not, I don't know. But since you went to the Paula Deen already, we're actually going to get into that tonight, but we'll just start there. I do have some Louisville stuff I really want to get into, and I want to make an announcement. But let's get into this Paula Deen thing since you already brought it up. For those of you who don't know what's going on with Paula Deen, Paula Deen was questioned under oath because of a lawsuit that was filed last year against her brother and business partner, Bubba. That's what we'll call him. We'll just call him Bubba. And that actually is his name, so I'm not really making jokes here. But anyway, her brother, Bubba Ayers, H-I-E-R-S, had a lawsuit filed against him by a former employee for sexual and racial harassment. Apparently, he likes using the word nigger. Now, I'm going to use that word again for you folks, nigger. And the reason I'm using that word nigger is real simple. It's just a word. It's just a word. But we have become so polarized. And the reason I decided to go ahead and put that word out there, I'll be honest with you. I watched this Paula Deen case going on and on and on. And last night I watched a Richard Pryor documentary. It's on Showtime this month. It's about 1 o'clock in the morning. I was flipping channels, wanted to get about a half-hour television in to help me go to sleep. And I watched this Richard Pryor documentary, ended up watching the whole thing. And it was fascinating. Everybody during the 70s and 80s used the N-word on TV, on radio, everything else. Richard Pryor made his whole comedic career out of using the N-word. So we're talking about a time period. Now, I don't like the N-word. I really don't. I think it's degrading and everything else. But it's just a word. You're only empowered if you allow somebody to be empowered by using it. Paula Deen, at her age, and I can't stand Paula Deen. I've got news for you. I can't stand anything about this fake woman at all. But Paula Deen admitted under oath that she had used the N-word, you know, in the past. Says she hasn't done it in many years. But she has used the N-word in the past, and all of a sudden, her whole empire is crumbling down. The Food Network canceled her show. Her books have just immediately dropped all kinds on sales and everything else. I think they're down to, I think she's down to like 25% of her normal book sales now, and it's dropping even further because she admitted to using the N-word. Now, Ed, we bring that up, and we talk about that. Her brother actually admitted that he was guilty of sexually and racially harassing this employee. He admitted he did it. So there was no disturbance here. This has been within the last 2 years. The lawsuit was filed a year ago. But Paula Deen swears nobody in her family, including her brother, believes anything like that. Well, her brother has admitted to doing this. Paula Deen says she hasn't done it in years. How far does the apple fall from the tree?
I have no idea. I'm going to be honest, and I'm proud to say this. I have never watched Paula Deen. All I've heard is people make jokes about her and how much butter she uses on her food. Beyond that, I know nothing of this woman, you know. You know, like I say, it's obviously in the news. I hit it with a glancing blow there, but you know, it's interesting. You know, I don't know the context in which she used the word. Now, granted, I think most people will use the word, if nothing else, just in the context of discussing the word. It's a, you know, I have black employees, and you know, it's probably not unusual to say, hey, you know, you just ask them, anybody ever call you the N-word or something? And, you know, it's just, or or you might come up in conversation. Hey, you know, what's the deal with all the rappers? Something like that. But you know, to actually use it to degrade someone, no, you can't go there. And to sexually harass someone, you can't go there either. But I mean, it'd be interesting, you know, because what I heard on the radio, they were talking about the questioning. It's like, have you ever said the N word? And it's like she said, whatever. Yeah, I suppose so. Like, you know, what was the context? You know,
that's the thing.
Yelling at her brother, saying you can't say that. You know. Say what?
Well, I mean,
say that.
But in her prime, though, Ed, I mean, that's the whole thing. Paula Deen is in her 60s. I don't like her. I've always thought she was a hypocrite, talking about how great her food was until she got type 2 diabetes and got diagnosed with that. Then all of a sudden she changed all her recipes and all the other stuff, said, oh, maybe I was wrong, and decided she wasn't even going to eat her own damn food and started eating healthy. She'd been polluting the world, made a fortune doing it. But when we look at this, Paula Deen's prime, if you will, would have been throughout the 60s and 70s at her age. That would have been her young adult life. You know, in the 60s and 70s, it was totally acceptable. If you watch the Richard Pryor documentary, you'll find it. Johnny Carson uses it on air. All these other celebrity people were using it on TV, radio. It was common. It was just a word. It wasn't that big a deal. You know, but people decided they wanted to use that as an empowerment word for discrimination. You know, and that's the problem. I just used the N-word more at the beginning of this rant than I have in my entire life. And I think I mentioned it 3 or 4 times. I've never even said a joke using the N-word as a catalyst for it. I just don't care for it. It's not that I think the word is empowering. It's just, to me, you can usually do better than using garbage like that when you're communicating. But what's really fascinating here is, for Paula Deen is now, she's sitting out there saying, many years ago, of course I did. It was part of, you know, what we went through when we were growing up, you know. But then she had to acknowledge one thing that she didn't really want everybody to know. When her brother was getting married in 2007, Paula Deen actually decided to come up with the idea of hiring an all-black waiter staff, you know, to cater to that, you know, with the old black towel on the arms, you know, and a yes, master kind of stuff. You know, like you still get at Mike Lenny's if you can get a black waiter down there, you know. And did she try to do that for brother's wedding? Then, of course, she said she dismissed the idea. But it was only because back then everybody was like, you can't do this. You'll be chastised. So she can't say that this was when she was a kid or younger. Her brother admits that he's still doing that kind of stuff. So I understand that Paula Deen probably used poor choice of words. She got caught in some of her decisions. But at the same time, at the end of the day, why are we empowering a word to be so divisive? I've been called a honky more times than I could admit in my life. I've been called a honky so many times I couldn't begin to tell you. Should I find that offensive? I've been called a cracker. Should that be offensive? You know, I mean, you know, it's only the way you empower the word, and that's the only problem I've got with the whole deal. No, I don't like Paula Deen. I don't like what she did, but I don't think she should be destroyed over doing it. It's just a word. But
well,
the media is making her out to be a bad guy.
I think some of it's probably an overreaction. You know, it needs to be taken in context. I mean, definitely, if she's on set saying, you know, hey, boy, go get me that. You know, it's like, all right, Paula, wake the hell up. It's 2010 or whatever, whenever, you know, it's like, wake up. But
well, sure.
But, yeah, beyond that, I mean, it needs to be viewed in context. And, yeah, I think people are getting blown up about it. I'm sure many people are offended, but like you said, she's an old Southern woman, so it probably was part of her upbringing. She probably never, you know, in her upbringing, probably never heard African American. Who knows? I don't know. I don't truly care because this is not like we're talking about a world leader or something that sets policy here. It's
right, exactly.
It's a woman who is a more marketing guru than a cook, and she writes cookbooks, okay? You know that at the beginning, her cookbooks are off. It's like, great. Well, she's not making some big social commentary. She's not making some giving investment advice or speaking out against wars or making policy statements on socioeconomic issues. Cookbook,
right. Lighten
up, move on. You know what? If she gets wiped out, so what? She's still got more money. She'll ever be able to live She'll never be able to live long enough to spend it all, and she won't be missed. You know, we move from Emerald going bam with his food to the Hell's Kitchen chef to Paula Deen to, you know, Julia Child. We'll just keep moving on. There'll be another cook, and it'll be okay.
Well, that's it. That's exactly it. I think it's a mountain out of a molehill. For the media to turn this into what they have done, it just goes to prove even further that the media really truly has no integrity. It's all about the sensationalism, and everything mainstream media today is a National Enquirer effect, is what I call it. So we'll take it from there.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of people. You're always going to hear me saying it's lazy. It's easy. I mean, you and I both have similar left-leaning liberal friends, and I recall not too long ago, and one of them said, he wrote something. He said, I hear people refer to my black friends or this or that. And he said, I'm asking the blacks, is this offensive when someone refers to you as a black friend or something? And I just had to respond. I said, I don't have to refer to my black friends as black friends. They generally have names, okay?
Exactly.
Come on, just call people by their name and throw up, everybody.
Well, I mean, I go through the same thing. I mean, I've got several black friends, and friends that just happen to be black. But I when I go in their circles, it's always funny because when you go in their circle, the roles are completely reversed. Where they may come into my circle, and you're going to have a majority of white people at some of these events that we go to. They feel a little awkward because they're just like, oh man, there's a black guy. Well, you ought to try having the roles reversed. I've been in that reverse role several times. Oh, I mean, it's just funny because you walk into a place that's predominantly black, and you're introduced as the white friend, and it's hilarious. It really is, and I just always laugh about it. It's not a big deal to me, but I laugh about it. But we're going to take a quick break. Take our first break. When we get back, believe it or not, folks, we have an election right here in Kentucky tomorrow, and we're going to cover just a little bit about that in the 56th District House race right here in Kentucky. And Louisville made the national news again, this time the New York Times. You may be interested to hear what it's all about. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
over it. Don Henley, of course, singing lead. You got to have a little good old rock and roll from time to time, and I just love that song. So guess what? It's my show. I'll play it. Thank you for listening. We're going into break, and I tell you, there's always talk about there's never a shortage of content, but this one should be pretty good. In Kentucky, we actually do have an election tomorrow. Yep, you got that right. Towards the end of June, we've actually got an election. The election is for the 56th House District right here in Kentucky. Republicans put up a guy by the name of Lyon Cruz. I tell you, I don't like any guy who wants to get into politics, and their first name is Lyon. Democrats put up a 30-year-old kid named James Kay, who likes to say he's something he's not. And then we've got an independent in the race, is John Mark Hack. This is interesting because of the timing. It's an unusual time to have an election. But what really makes this story so interesting to me is when you look at the spending so far, but they've already spent over $450,000 on the race. And according to political consultant Jimmy Cawley, he's the one who's running Kay's campaign, he expects that they're going to spend a total between them of $750,000 for a state House race with three candidates. That's unheard of. Yeah. What do we do here, man? What's going on?
Well, I tell you what, it's pretty mind-blowing when you think that in the city of Louisville that we had a U.S. congressional race that didn't even come close to that.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, I think the last couple they might have gotten there, they might not have. But, I mean, that is just absolutely, it's mind-blowing. I guess there's something to be said for having an off-year special election. You know, it's like these special interests got money they want to put somewhere. You're the only one going right now. You got an odd date up. I guess they got to throw it somewhere. So they're going after, a single, like you said, a single state house seat, not a U.S. congressional seat, a single state house seat. Absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah, they meet for a month, 1 year, and then they have the alternate year where they meet for 2 months. I mean, it's a part-time job. It's totally mind-boggling. And when we look at the money that's being spent, most of the money that's being spent on this race is actually coming from outside the state, from outside the state political action committees. And the largest majority of that is going to Republican Cruz, Lyon Cruz. Cruz's campaign reported raising $68,000 through June the 10th, but Pro-Jobs, Pro-Kentucky, it's a Louisville Republican super PAC, raised $18,000 on his behalf. And the state Republican State Leadership Committee, which is a Washington super PAC, has raised over $168,000 for him. Then you compare that to Kay, who is a Democrat challenger. Let's not even look at the independent yet. Kay's campaign got $132,000 through June the 10th. But Kentucky Family Values, which is always makes me choke and laugh, especially if the Democrats are on it, but Kentucky Family Values, which is a Democratic super PAC, reported raising $52,500. That's a hell of a lot of money coming from outside the state for a state house race. You know, we have to ask ourselves why so many people are worried about a state house race from outside the state. And it really is puzzling. Our good friend Jake over at Page One Kentucky, well, I'll say your good friend Jake. Everybody knows there's not a lot of love lost between me and Jake, but I want to give him credit. Page One Kentucky does do some serious work. When Jake puts his nose to the grindstone, he does put some good stuff out there. And he followed last Tuesday's candidate forum. And it's interesting how much lying goes on in these things. But the Democrat, James Kay, they were asked different questions, and he used one question about the restoration of voting rights for felons to tell the whole world that he has worked as an active attorney. He's 30 years old, folks. Remember that going forward. And, you know, he has handled at least one case as an acting attorney, and that had to do with the frat brothers' drug charges. That's the only attorney work anybody can find on him. And Jake is super good. When he goes fishing, he'll find it. So this guy is not an active attorney. He's lying like a dog. The so-called felons he actually represented, he didn't represent any felons. He was working for Ben Chandler and Greg Stumbo as an intern. So, here's a guy who's using an internship that when he was a college student to act like he's done some kind of legal work, which is a lie. So we have to start looking at this. And then, of course, Lion Cruz, his name is everywhere right now. And I'm not really finding anything about Lion Cruz that's worthy of spending a lot of time on. And, you know, and then, of course, you've got the independent, John Mark Hack. He has spent somewhere around $30,000 total in this race. And he's got a problem, too. He's got a Kim Gavidin is running his campaign, which should say enough about him having any kind of shot at all. So, Ed, what gives? What's going on? Why are so many people so worried about this particular seat?
Well, as we all know, in Kentucky, the Republicans control the Senate, the state Senate. And they really, really want to control the state House. And this is one of the more disappointing things that you know, when I was a libertarian, this is the thing we would shake our head at. Now that I'm a Republican, you know, I still shake my head at it. And it's this fixation on this majority-minority dynamic. To me, it's so disappointing sometimes when they don't run on solutions or, you know, I'm unaware of any new ideas that somebody's saying, hey, you know, elect me and I'll be a blabbermouth. I'll get up there and champion this, you know, this reform or this new idea or something like that. They don't. There's nothing like that. It's just this is strictly the whole race is fixated almost exclusively on winning a majority or maintaining a majority. It's just they're trying to inch their way towards that, and that's where all the smoke and fire is coming from. There's not some big core issue. There's not some big innovation. Not some revolutionary thinking. It's just like, you know, we want the majority or we want to maintain the majority, whatever. And they're going crazy with it. And you know, if you weren't disgusted with politics before, you ought to be after watching this. I mean, I'm sure each of the guys brings something to the table, but the fixation on the simple majority-minority dynamic is mind-numbing.
Well, it really is. And, I mean, you know, Cruz has got everybody and a brother out there working for him. He's got He's got just about every Republican House member out there has been in and out of his district for weeks, helping him campaign. Now Cruz, you know, to his benefit, you know, he is a CPA. He's a certified CPA. He's been vice president for business and financial affairs at Midway College, which, you know, that's debatable whether you want to include that as anything. He was also chief financial officer at several hospitals. So, you know, when you get into the accounting aspects, the budget aspects and stuff like that, on paper it looks like Cruz should have an advantage. You know, the problem is the way they're marketing this guy. You know, and I just don't like the way he's being marketed, so it's hard to tell if he's got any integrity or not. You could throw the Democrat K right out, K lying right out of the gate in an open forum as a 30-year-old first-time candidate. Forget him. I don't ever want to see this guy run for office again.
Yeah.
And the sad part is...
You got a 30-year-old with little if any legal experience, little if any business experience.
Right.
He does politics, and he wants to keep doing politics, and that's...
Well, that's it. He's spent his whole time.
And that's bothersome. I hate people that get out there and they want to, you know, they're itching to make a career out of politics.
That's exactly it, because politics is not supposed to be a career. But when you spend all your time interning for Greg Stumbo and Ben Chandler, then acting like you're a lawyer when you weren't because you were in law school, not an actual lawyer doing any work, you know, that's a major red flag for me. This guy clearly wants to follow the Jack Conway path, where all he wants to do is be a career politician and receive government welfare instead of working in his career field. What is interesting here, though, is the independent Hack. Hack actually got the editorial endorsement of the Lexington Herald Leader last Thursday. Now, you consider that the Democrat and Republican in this race have already spent roughly $450,000 and probably going to spend another $300,000. This little-known guy, independent Hack, is going to spend about 25 grand on the election.
The newspapers, radio stations, printers that print the mailers—they got to be loving this. This is Christmas in July, literally.
Oh, I agree. I mean, you know, and then they're advertising with the wrong people anyway. If you're advertising with the Courier and all these, they're not paying attention to those advertisements. That's why you need to advertise with shows like this. We're the ones who actually people pay attention to for their politics and their candidates. But it's really interesting that this unknown independent received the endorsement of a major paper, which Lexington Herald Leader clearly is considered a major paper in Kentucky in his district. And he's only going to spend about $25,000 to $30,000 on the election. So, you know, while these guys are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, as you said, Christmas in June, or the early Christmas in July sale, this guy is getting an incredible amount done. When you pull off an endorsement, let me tell you, folks, when you pull off an endorsement from a liberal paper and you're not a Democrat, you've accomplished something. And for Hack to pull off the endorsement, that's pretty good. This has been a 7-week campaign, hundreds of thousands of dollars spent, not from him, and he got the endorsement. Watch this race tomorrow. I really can't wait to see it. I want to see what's going on with it. And we'll have the results hopefully tomorrow night before the show is over. Louisville has made the New York Times, Ed. Louisville has made the New York Times. And I tell you what, we're going to take our second break, and when we get back, we'll get into that story. But it's pretty interesting. Man, I don't even know what to say about it. But it all has to do with healthcare. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
Tim Hawkins.net and TimHawkins.net. You'll find that song and so many other ones. It's just amazing how talented this comedian is in putting things to words. Ed, we've got all kinds of things going on with Obamacare. The Democrats are no longer happy with it because they finally read what they voted on and it scares them. We've got the unions are no longer happy with it. They spent millions of dollars trying to get Obamacare crashed down everybody's throat. But I didn't think that this fight would come with Louisville, Kentucky, making the New York Times. And what's really happened here is the New York Times has started to do a series of articles to see how the Obama health care law is affecting lives in one American city. And they decided to choose Louisville, Kentucky, as their American city. You know, when you look at the New York Times article, and actually I'll go ahead and copy that and post that into the chat room as we speak. For those who want to see it, you'll see the copy in there. But, you know, what's really fascinating here is ultimately what's happened is nobody really knows how to deal with Obamacare. Nobody knows how to deal with the demands of Obamacare. And when you get into these clinics, these health clinics, most of these health clinics are free clinics. Here in Louisville, we've got them all over the place. The one that they chose to list here, I'm not going to give the name of, but it's in a strip mall here in Louisville. You guys can figure out where it's at. But anyway, they bring a guy in from Obamacare, a guy by the name of Danny Dubosc. He's got an MBA, and he's going to come in there and try to tell these dozen clinic employees how to do their jobs. That's basically what it is. He spent some time with a dozen clinic employees who are there doing everything they can to treat Louisville's poor and their uninsured and giving them handouts. And he's brought in as a coach who was hired to help them adapt to the demands of Obamacare. Well, he came this particular day, and he wanted to discuss a new appointment system. And essentially, this appointment system was going to let patients see a doctor or a nurse within a few days instead of weeks or months. And that is reality, folks. When you go to the free clinics and stuff like that, you want to get appointments or anything, you know, sometimes it does take weeks or months to see them. You know, they're overworked, understaffed, you know, with limited resources. They can't see everybody. It's not like a private doctor like most of us go to who have insurance. You know, this is free care, so it's hard to satisfy everybody. Well, this guy comes in and wants to tell them how to take care of their appointments, trying to tell them that this is the way it is. And he made a mistake. Dr. Michelle Ellisberg, that ought to help you guys narrow down which clinic is that. Dr. Michelle Ellisberg is a pediatrician who happens to be at this clinic that sees 26 patients a day. Now, that may not sound like a whole heck of a lot, but when you think about a 10 or 12-hour day, that's three patients a day, 15 or 20 minutes a pop. That's not counting wait times. Those days get real long. And, you know, so she's upset because she has spent her whole career treating the poor at the clinic. And under this model by Dubosc, he's basically trying to say it's a first-come, first-serve. They're trying to set up these clinics to be a first-come, first-serve clinic. So whoever calls the fastest are immediately going to be the ones who've seen. Well, her problem is that because you're the fastest one to call, doesn't necessarily mean you're the one who really needs to be seen. You know, people go to doctors to get Band-Aids because they're too cheap to go to Walgreens and buy them themselves. So what she does is she basically is doing the right thing. She's treating the ones who need it the most emergent, the ones who are under the most emergency needs the quickest care, the best care, and then the ones who can wait. Well, this guy is trying to tell her it's all wrong, and it's all because of Obamacare. So now we're having all kinds of crazy problems, even with scheduling in the clinics, Ed. It's alarming. And, of course, when she brought this question to Dubosc, a 35-year-old who's done nothing more than spend his life in college now trying to tell people how to do their job, yes, Mr. Dubosc, I'm talking about you. You're a worm. That's what we call people like you. So now as soon as she raised her hands and asked this question, he immediately has to leave, you know, I've got to go. I've got to get to another meeting, and rushes out because he can't answer the question because he has no practical experience to do so.
Yeah.
How do we handle these kind of situations, Ed? Obamacare is going to kill us.
Well, I've long said, you know, whenever I write about something like Obamacare, is that, you know, the problem we're running into is we've got a bunch of politicians, you know, guys who couldn't make it as lawyers. That's pretty much what most of them are. You've got essentially social workers, and you got like consultants, which, you know, if you look at the word con and salt, which, you know, goes with insult, it put that together. But you've got these people, and they're going to come in. And this is the thing that always gets me, because I run a business, you know, and it's funny how I get people coming in and telling me they know how to run my business. It's like, yeah, I'll bet. You know, you've got some of the smartest people in the country, in the world. You know, they're doctors. They made it. You didn't. You know, let's just get – I didn't. You didn't. You know, they're doctors. They not only did they get through all their chemistry and math classes and physiology and anatomy, then they went on and became doctors. And then they got put through the meat grinder in their internship. And then some guy's going to show up with maybe an online master's degree or something. He's going to tell them how to run their business. Not going to fly, guys. Not going to fly, you know.
Well, like I said, I'm sure doctors look at the people. I'm sure they look at Barack Obama and say, yeah, that's wonderful. You got a law degree. That's cute. I have a doctorate, okay? Go away. I'm a specialist in orthopedic, in juvenile orthopedics. And you? Sure. But, I think the thing is what you're seeing here, and the thing that bothered me most is I've always said, or said it when I was a candidate, what we're doing is we're increasing the demand, but not doing anything to increase the supply. And you got guys like this coming in. When you say first come, first serve, I'm going to be real honest with you. What I hear when first come, first serve, because, I work 12-hour days and stuff, is, it's just like the question we ask when we see people marching and protesting. Don't these people have jobs? You know what? If you're working poor, you are not going to be the first ones there. You are not going to be the first ones to call because you're going to be busting your ass at your first, second, or third shift job if you don't have two jobs. And you're not going to be able to take home break, until it's break time to go make that call where somebody who's not working, it's going to be easy. They just get up when the clinic opens, they call or whatever. So I think that to a degree, it's almost, I can see why the doctor doesn't want to do this. Not only is she, the first caller may in fact be somebody who's a little constipated or has a hangnail. The ninth caller may be a 6-year-old that's having a severe asthma attack. Move the kid to the front of the line. The consultant boy, get out of the way. Doctor knows. It's called triage. They know what they're doing. Back the hell off.
Well, and that's true. And, the sad reality is this. I mean, Kentucky does have high obesity rates and diabetes and things like that, high rates of smoking and everything else. But those particular problems run rampant throughout the poorest, and that's the key here, the poorest cities of America. That includes Louisville. Governor Beshear is on record in this particular article as saying the health outcomes in Kentucky are horrendous, and he claims it's because of the high rates of smoking, obesity, cancer, diabetes, all these things. These aren't problems that nobody else has. These are problems we all share in the poor communities and the poor cities throughout America. It's not just Louisville. What's really interesting to me is they would rather sit here and instead of understanding that the poor is the problem, maybe we need to do something to work on the poor so that people can get, regular benefits to pay for this kind of stuff. They're trying to dictate and trying to act like, we like being this welfare state and that the people in Kentucky don't have any more pride than that. They have done everything they could. At one time, Louisville was the largest manufacturing hub in the world. With GE at its peak, you had Ford Motor Company, International Harvester, all these other things right here. It's the Democratic leadership that ran all of that out of Louisville that has destroyed the Louisville market. And part of this article, they actually talk about the west end of Louisville. And they talk about how asthma, high blood pressure, long-term chronically depression, unemployed, people with advanced diabetes, feeble hearts. This is West End, folks. This is where you go to die because it's the poorest place in town and you can't get help anywhere. And these clinics, the reason that they've decided to use these particular clinics in Louisville, has a lot to do with the fact that these clinics are expecting their workload to double. They don't have enough staff to handle what they've got now. They don't have enough material to handle what they have to take care of now. And now they want them to see twice as many patients with less money than they're used to having for what they've got right now. These guys are already overworked, overstressed, and underpaid.
Yep.
The poor don't have a shot. This is what it all means to me. And that's the problem for me. When we have the governor out here making statements like that, then fix it.
Yeah, well, I think the other thing that you don't hear people say, and again, as a candidate, I said it's going to bend the supply and demand curve in the wrong direction, is basically we've got this doctor, and my wife and many members of my family are in the medical profession, generally nurses, and I'll tell you, the paperwork that comes along with all this crap is unbelievable. So if she's seeing that many patients a day, she's doing at least half her time probably consumed with paperwork. But it's still a pretty good load, depending on what she's seeing.
what I don't hear them saying, because, you know, I'm as recreational economist, and supply, it all comes back to supply and demand. So this pinhead's coming in and saying, you know, we're going to show you how to cram more through here.
Yeah.
What I don't hear is we need to figure out through whether the education system or the financing of higher education or something, we need to figure out how about we double down on the doctors and healthcare professionals, and then they can see more people. You know, oh, wait, that takes work, and that takes, you know, it takes a dozen years to make a good doctor. So, yeah, but they're not addressing that. They're basically, it's almost like they're throwing up the white flag saying, hey, we're screwed. We don't have enough doctors. We don't have enough resources. Let's just see if we can cram more. Let me see if we can just cram a few more people through. Let's see if we can bump your workload up. You know, not going to
send
you anywhere.
Well, that's exactly it.
Cavalry's not coming, but we'll just cram a little bit more through you.
Well, it's always about making you do more with less, and unfortunately, there's nothing, no lower than we can go with less. Now, the addition of new nurse practitioners is helping to some degree, but not nearly enough. Let's go to the phones. I think this is Paul with Stop It. Am I right?
You are. You
hot
are.
Dog.
What the?
How are you, sir?
Remember, do you guys remember all of the national media criticism when opponents of Obamacare started comparing what Obamacare was going to do to basically a group of people deciding who lives and who dies? They got the name
Death
Squad. Do y'all remember that?
Yeah.
Very much so.
Well, it looks like that hysteria wasn't so hysterical after all. Looks like there was some merit to that. Isn't this, in fact, what the system is forcing not only the supposed intended beneficiary, but also the entire medical system into doing, basically choosing who lives and who dies?
Oh, sure. Let's pick the guy who needs a Band-Aid and let him get seen while the person who's bleeding out in the waiting room dies. We won't have to worry about his long-term health care no more, and it just costs the price of a Band-Aid. Sure, that's what they're doing. There's no doubt about that. The problem for me is, though, how do we fix this? How do we get these people to wake up? When Bashir is out there who's doing everything he can to help destroy what's left of manufacturing in Kentucky with these asshole unions out there, and I've got to put them under the gun, you know, we're destroying everything in Kentucky that can give people a livable wage, that can help people get medical benefits through their employer, thanks to Obamacare. Now your employers are opting out of Obamacare, paying a fine and saving tons of money, making even more profits. This is an alarming trend. The Democrats in Kentucky and the Democrats in Louisville are the problem that we've got having sustainable health care. I mean, Louisville, I mean, let's face facts here, Paul. This is true. Louisville is well known around the world. We were the first ones who did the hand transplant. We did the world's first implant of an artificial heart. Humana, you know, largest insurer, Humana is based here. We've got four nationally known hospitals and a medical school, a U of L medical school, right here in downtown area. You know, we've got all of this in healthcare, and yet we have an alarming number of people who have to go get free healthcare at these clinics, and the clinics can't afford them anymore. They can't take care of them anymore. And Obamacare comes along and says, we're going to give you less money, but you have to see twice as many people. The death panels are no longer in the shadows. I think they're very relevant to the discussion, Paul.
Obamacare, according to a source I heard the other day, has created a medical coding system in which there are over, you ready for this, 100,000 separate medical codes to be used to determine who gets benefits and who does not get benefits.
It's actually 140,000. We covered that story about a month ago right here. It's actually a little over 140,000 medical codes. And today, before they put these new changes in place, they only have 18,000. They're adding 122,000.
So now the good doctor's not only overloaded with patients and paperwork, Now they've got to go through and get real specific on the codes, and if they get something wrong, they probably won't get reimbursed by the government. So, yeah,
right.
Again,
there you go.
You know,
there you go.
All I can say is, you know what, is Obamacare, I don't really buy into the death panels per se, but as I say, as I'm often fond of saying, if you do something, if you build something in such a way that in the end result, you get supply and demand far enough out of whack that people are died. They die because of lack of access. That's a de facto. It's not a death panel. It's more like a death march. You know, it's like you're doomed far back in the line. So, yeah, I mean, I can see doctors eventually, and I've known a number of practitioners and doctors that have had their own practice, and they just eventually, and a number of them have said, "Down with it." You know what? Between the paperwork, the reimbursement, the insurance, and all the crap you got to put up with, and the workload, it's not worth it. They join big groups like the Baptist Healthcare Network or the Norton or Jewish Healthcare Network. They get in with the big guys because they don't have the ability to keep up with this stuff anymore. And then you're going to end up consolidating and. Yeah, it's going to become, and you know, the thing is all this is set up for the poor. It's the idea. Let's insure the uninsured. Let's do this. And guess what? Between privatizing clinic-type doctors and forcing them into it, because they're just going to say enough of this crap, and some of the private doctors even going so far as to go into concierge service because they're just like, you know what? And a lot of private doctors are refusing Medicaid. It's like, guess what? That's a de facto death panel. When you've got Medicaid or Medicare, or you know, especially, and the doctor says, "No, we don't take that in this office."
Right.
Hit the road.
Well,
hit the road,
that's it.
And good luck. If you don't find somebody, your condition's going to go from annoying to chronic to terminal while you're looking for a doctor to take it on.
Well, there's no doubt. Go ahead, Paul.
Let me close my comments with this question because I really find it puzzling and intriguing at the same time. Why the New York Times would pick out of all the metropolitan areas in the United States, why would Louisville, Kentucky be chosen for a series related to Obamacare's impact on a community? And I'm a little cynical insofar as I recall, the New York Times is a kind of a bleeding hearts kind of newspaper, as I recall.
It is.
All right.
It is.
And former mayor Jerry Abramson clearly had a lot of friends up in the New York City area. Okay.
He had a lot of boyfriends there. That's true.
And I'm wondering if the New York Times isn't in fact going to be carrying some water for some of the politicians here in Kentucky to assist them somehow in doing something. But I don't have any idea what that might be.
Oh, I think that's easy. I think that's easy.
Well, I tell you what, if they are, you don't want to start off with the New York Times basically, you know, putting ink to it that, hey, the doctor told the consultant to, you know, bug off.
Listen, man, listen, it's not that hard to link it together. You've got Jerry Abramson, Steve Beshear, and John Yarmuth all locked at the hip. Everybody's trying to get rid of Mitch McConnell. So you sit here, they can't get Mitch McConnell on their own merits with Allison Lundigan Grimes or Ashley Judd because they're both psychos. So you sit here and plant the state seed, and you set the stage for Louisville as the poorest damn city in the nation, which we are one of the poorest cities in the nation. And you set the stage for all of this stuff so that you can try to get an outcome from a favorable source like the New York Times. There's no doubt in my mind this is all interrelated, but it doesn't change the facts of what we're dealing with. And for Governor Steve Beshear to sit out here and start crying about all the problems we've got, and he's been one of the major contributors to these problems, along with his latchkey lieutenant governor, Jerry Abramson, former mayor of Louisville for more than 20 years, who destroyed this city. It's not a big secret how we got where we're at. And as long as I'm talking about that, Paul, I'm going to put you back in the queue. I'm getting a lot of background noise. I thank you for your call. As long as we're on that subject, Dale Gillespie, as I've mentioned for the last couple of shows, is going to be taking a few weeks off on his Thursday night show, his solo Thursday night show on Wednesday nights with me. He's got to take care of some business. He's got a lot of work issues and other things he's got to try to take care of. And time has been really tough for him. So this past Thursday, we were planning on doing replay shows, is what I was planning for the next few weeks. It's awful hard to add that extra night into my schedule for a live show because I've got other things that I make appointments and things like that on that off night so that I can keep up with all the stuff. Well, this past Thursday, interestingly enough, Rob Chapman, retired detective Rob Chapman, he's also our traffic expert and our bridges expert. We bring him on the air every now and then. We talk about local issues in Louisville. Retired LMPD officer, everything else. So this guy really knows Louisville inside and out. Stepped up to the plate, and he said he would go ahead and do the Thursday show for Dale. And he's wanting to focus on Louisville issues and Louisville history and things like that. And that first show was Thursday night, and early reports are it's hugely successful. But, you know, maybe with this Thursday night show and Rob, you know, maybe Rob will be wanting to go down the line of adding even more of these political connections than even I have, you know, and try to find out more and more. But everything is interrelated. And this deal with the medical here in Louisville is on the New York Times list for a reason. I don't know what that is, and I'm glad Paul brought up that question. But, you know, it is really alarming. But it's fascinating to me when Bashir is talking about we've got to stop smoking all this other crap. And it actually ties into one more story. You can go over to CN2 Pure Politics with Ryan Alessi's network, for what it's worth. But anyway, they had an article out today where U.S. Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, decided to say past Thursday that Kentucky would be better off and would benefit from Obama's proposal to expand pre-kindergarten programs so that every four-year-old in the country can get in pre-kindergarten. Now, what he says he needs to do here, though, is Kentucky needs to raise their taxes, that Obama needs Congress to approve $75 billion in new federal tobacco taxes to fund this plan. Now, to tell you how much that means, you're going to raise the taxes on cigarettes from $1.01 a pack to $1.95 per pack. Now, this is the same old, Ed, and I know you're going to agree with this, this is the same old Sin City tax gimmick that they've always played. What they didn't tell everybody is, and of course Jack Conway is with this idiot, you know, slobbering all over him because Conway wants to be a governor someday or up in Washington because he's a career politician who's never been a real lawyer either other than having a spoon fed to him. But here's the thing with this. What they're not telling everybody with this sin tax is they keep raising the rates on tobacco for taxes and they keep taking in less tax revenue because the more they raise the taxes of cigarettes, people don't buy those tobacco products anymore. Now, maybe they're growing their own, I don't know. But they're not buying those products anymore, so the tax revenue that they want to come up with, they don't get. They want to raise $75 billion in new federal tobacco taxes to fund this plan that's going to be there forever, but they might get $75 billion the first year, but they're going to get less money the second year because people are going to quit smoking. How much sense does any of that make, Ed?
Well, it's the old boiling a frog thing. They get enough people since smokers are in a minority that, you know, they're going to get the majority. So yeah, go get them. But like you say, it's a decreasing revenue. It's just, you know, there was a time when cigarette prices were so cheap in Kentucky, and they were cheap, and they still are cheap. But you know, you had people who come into the state to buy their cigarettes. They don't do that anymore. You know, the more you raise the taxes, the less it's going to happen. But also, when you talk, you know, and the thing is these people, they talk $75 million, you know, and that's going to be enough to get, and in this man's fantasy world, that's going to be enough to get all these kids in pre-K. Doubtful.
Right.
You know, if you back it off and say, you know, there's, let's just say, you know, over a certain period of time, there's a million kids are going to need to go through it. It's like, well, we want to start dividing that out and see if you can provide a facility, teachers, all the media that they use. Don't forget, teachers are going to put in 30 and then retire. So you got to double down on the teacher. You know what the cost of the teacher is. It sounds $75 million sounds great when he sits there and says it, but really, it would never be enough. You know, and again, they always get into the supply and demand end of it. It's like, okay, well, you know, we need more money so we can do more things.
Hey, wait a minute. Wasn't the guy from Washington just here telling the doctors do more with less? You know, this guy's telling us that, well, we need more to do more. It's like, wait a minute. Well, if you and that other consultant get together and then you don't come back and just tell the education industry in Kentucky, you're just going to have to do more with less, like you told the doctors.
Yeah, well, that's liberal logic 101. I mean, that's the whole thing, though. When you talk about supply and demand, I mean, this is a liberal logic 101. The liberals say abortion should be legal, kill all your babies. So if you're killing all your babies, you're not going to have four-year-olds. If you don't have four-year-olds, then you don't need $75 billion for four-year-olds to go to school. Hey, that's just my opinion. Ed, final thoughts, my friend. We're out of time.
Oh, we're out of time. Well, you know, we've touched on so many things. The election that's tomorrow doesn't involve me except for in the spectator sport. But, you know, I go back to once, you know, I've run a few races and lost big. And, you know, I've kicked around the idea of a state house. And it's you know, I hear these numbers and I read these numbers that Jake's putting up and just how dirty this campaign's getting. Yeah, you know, I had somebody some time ago says, well, you know, if you want to run for state house, they looked at me and says, you're going to need $25,000, you know, to make a worthwhile run at it. You know, that's to get you off, you know, that's to put up a worthy race. You need $25,000. And I'm like, oh, that's a pretty nice chunk of change, you know, especially for a guy who's not good at asking people for money. And then I hear these numbers that are going up here in this race, and it just, you know, it's always a thing. Like you said, it's a part-time job. It doesn't pay awful much, and it just, you've got to get your cynicism, you know, your cynical radar up and say, why the hell are people putting so much money into this? I mean, are they that desperate to control the purse strings? Are they that desperate to, you know, to get to that, you know, to flip that majority from whatever, 40, you know, from 49-51 to 51-49? Is it, and ask yourself, why? Why are these groups so interested in that? And then ask yourself, okay, so let's say a winner comes out of this and he's a major party, which is where the spending's going. What does this guy owe those people who threw that money up? Because there is a tit for tat. There is a quid pro quo going on here. People don't throw that kind of money at a campaign and expect nothing. You know, so you're either going to be loyal to the party or maybe they, you know, it's just, you've got to get cynical. And I, you know, I hate to say that. But the money going into that race and the effort going into that race is not, it's not synced up with the importance of the seat. It's not synced up with the job. It's not synced up with the weighted votes in the House and stuff. There's more at play here, and people need to ask themselves when they go to vote, you know, who do you trust not to be a puppet? Because there's definitely a lot of money going on here that, you know, and there's a puppet master somewhere. So who do you think will be able to cut the strings when they get elected and represent people, not the special interest?
And, you know, I can think of a better way for people to spend their money, too. They can spend their money by donating right here to us. Write to me at myviewmatters@AOL.com. You people want to advertise? You know, everybody needs affordable advertising. We've got affordable ad rates. You've got a small business, we can help you out. But spend your money wisely. Advertise here. These politicians are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars for nothing, for absolutely nothing. And this is where they need to spend it. But, you know, I'm not going to spend my time ranting and raving. I will tell everybody here, you know, thank you so much for making our numbers go up. We appreciate it. We continue growing, and it's all because of you guys. If you think we're doing the job you think we need to, then start clicking on our advertising links on the website. That helps us pay the bills. Now, with that in mind, here's a public service announcement for you. I'm going to spend it and close the show with DADS, which stands for DADS and Down Syndrome Children. Is a program I've been actively involved in for many, many years. The DADS program deals with nothing but Down syndrome kids, special needs children. They do great work. I could tell you so many things. They have annual picnics. They have annual fishing expeditions, you know, annual fairs for these kids. They bring kids in from all over the nation right here to Louisville and do different things. Anyway, they're having a fundraiser. Their annual, this is the 21st annual golf scramble for their DADS program, is on Monday, August the 5th at Quail Chase Golf Course right here in Louisville. Starts at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. They are now going ahead seeking for their teams, hole sponsors, anything you want to donate for site and auction items, you know, anything that you give to dads. Nobody within a dad's organization receives a dime. It's not like your typical charity. It's not like everybody else where 60 to 80% goes for overhead and very little goes to the kids. The dad's program, 100% of all proceeds go back into the dad's program to assist and support the fathers and families and the kids with Down syndrome and other special needs. So if you guys would be interested, it's $75 a person, $300 per team. It's Monday's 21st annual golf scramble, Monday, August the 5th, at Quail Chase Golf Course. You can write to me at myviewmatters@aol.com for more information, or you can go to the dad's website and get information there as well. We'll put a link up and onto our website at LouisvillePolitics.com and at Springfield.com. We'll put the link up there, and you guys can go ahead and join through there. But please, if you're going to do something with your money, make it worthwhile. You know, give it to something like Dad's. That's a great organization. I can't tell you. I have a special needs guy kid that is my world, and my little buddy Devin. And all I can tell you is this. The difference that your little contribution makes and what it can do for a child is incredible, especially when every dime goes back to that child in that program, not into salaries and overhead like a lot of these around the country do. So that's it for tonight, folks. Make sure you tune in tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Mr. Martin will be back here as usual. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com. Join the RSS feed. Click the links, all that good stuff. And we'll see you then. Have a great night. Take care.
All right. Have a good one, Ed.
Thanks, sir.